You got your intro, C-Mac.
We got it, finally.
Is that your theme music?
That's it.
Yes, it is.
Oh. Okay.
Jeez. Well, we've already disappointed our special guest. Welcome to the Eagles Insider Podcast. Chris McPherson here, along with Fran Duffy, Bo Wolf, and our special guest this week, Eagles Hall of Fame wide receiver and analyst for the 94 WIP broadcast, the one and only Mike Quick.
The man they call Plan B. Or whenever you can't get a real guest, you bring in Mike Quick.
That's just perfect.
Oh, jeez.
I feel so welcome right now.
Bo knows how to keep it real here on the podcast.
I love Bo.
Oh, the lies are just coming out now, left and right here, to get this thing
That's
rolling.
Perfect.
So special alumni captain this week.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know what?
First choice.
Yeah. It was fun. It was great. You know, the black shirts, the blackout, that was a lot of fun.
I was disappointed that you didn't get a chance to make the call. Since we were the home team, the visiting team got to make the call. I was hoping you'd pull out the tails never fails.
Yeah, but tails never but it worked out perfectly.
Oh, it did.
You know, I stood out beside Brent Celek. It's strange. I haven't stood on the field like that but right before the game in a long, long time, and it was like really eerie. Like, should I really be here right now? But, you know, the coin toss went the Eagles' way, and they took the ball rather than deferring. And I thought that was real cool because right away you move the ball down the field and you got the fans into it. And these fans were hyped for that game. It was fun.
And especially after, you know, the last couple of weeks where, like, the defense will score, the special team scores, and the offense doesn't get on the field till the end of the first quarter. So it was nice to get them out there.
Yeah, I thought that was real cool. To get them out early, get Nick into a rhythm, I thought that was real key. And the crowd was – they were just so into it. And, you know, guys feed off of that. Guys like it when they have their home crowd getting into the game. And I think all of that helps. I thought the entire night, I thought, just went off very well.
This was actually my first regular season home game on the sideline. I was out of the studio this weekend. I was on the sideline, and so I don't have a frame of reference, but it was loud. Like,
yeah,
when
it was
that first half when the Giants were on offense, I mean, it was loud. I can't imagine how their offense was able to communicate whatsoever.
They weren't able to.
Yeah. Clearly,
yeah. Well, that's what happened.
Right. You that first time out, I think it was the crowd that forced that time out. And
in
that offense, they need to be able to communicate verbally. Which is one of the nice things about this offense. You don't have to have the verbal communication. They got all these signals, and they look kind of crazy and weird doing all that stuff. But it's effective.
So when do you realize in the course of a game, Mike, that things are going to snowball and things are going to go the way like they did for the Eagles? Is that something that you're up in the booth and you're like, this is the Eagles' night. They've got this.
Yeah, sometimes you can feel the tide turning and like one team or one side getting the momentum. But I thought throughout the game, there was no turning of the tide. I thought that the Eagles were in control of the game, the entire game, because the bigs controlled the line of scrimmage. And when the bigs control the line of scrimmage, you're going to have a good day.
The only chance where it seemed like it could flip was after that second Nick interception.
Yes.
Which was obviously not a good interception. But for the defense to hold, and
part
of it was because Victor Cruz got hurt and dropped that ball. But after that, I thought that was probably the
well, even problem. With that, you didn't want to see that happen. But even with that, I still thought that they were in control. And even if the Giants had scored on that possession,
mm-hmm.
I still think that they were in control and they were going to win the game. They were just determined. You know, I just love the way the big guys played in that game. You know, I played on the outside. You know, I'm one of the skilled guys. But I realized that you can't do anything unless your bigs can control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball.
Now, when did you realize that? Did you realize that as a player, or have you realized that since you came to the booth?
Well.
Back then, you're probably like, just give me the ball.
Yeah, just throw me the ball. I don't care about that. But, no, one of the things that I always did, and I watched Darren Sproles after he scored. When they got to the sideline, he went over to where all the linemen were sitting, and he was giving all the linemen dap, like making sure that they realized that he appreciated the job that they did. I was like that. Even if I didn't do it on the field, when I got to the sideline, I wanted to make sure that all of these guys know that I appreciate the job. I like watching Sproles do that after he scored.
Do you ever, when you call yourself a skill position player, do you ever tell the guys, like, hey, you have no skill? You have no, like, the offensive linemen? Like, they know it?
I'm the skill guy here?
The unskilled guys?
Yeah, you let them. They already know. Growing up, they knew that they weren't skilled guys. They were big guys.
I know, but I just like the names, skill positions. Like you don't have to have any skills to play offensive line. It's just go out there and get the job
done.
Let's go
tell Jason Peters that. You know, you're one of the unskilled guys.
No, what's really strange is how the game is really changing, and that so many everybody seems to be skilled guys, especially in systems like this where you're expecting 300-pound guys to get out on the perimeter and make blocks against guys that are 190 and guys who are agile guys who are skilled. So you're asking these 300-pounders to get out on the edge and make blocks against these guys, so there's a lot of skill involved in that.
So did you ever envision yourself playing in today's NFL? And think about all the things that could do.
I'm old, man.
I mean, when you were skilled.
What are you trying to say?
You're probably not skilled anymore.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Except on the golf course.
Yeah, clearly.
I would, any era, I would enjoy playing. I love the game. It's a great game. And
it's a very PC answer.
Yeah. It's just a great game. Any era, I think even in the... You know, I look back at the old footage when guys were in black and white. I think I would have had fun in that era. And now I would certainly have fun in this era.
Has there ever been a coach that you've seen coming up and you say, like, oh, I wish I could play in that scheme?
Yeah, this one.
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have a lot of fun in this scheme. I'd complain like all wide receivers. I'd want the ball all the time. But it's because I could do something with it.
Why are wide receivers such divas?
Why in general do you paint everyone with the same brush? They're not.
Well.
You paint everyone with the same brush. Unfair. Just
okay,
not
well,
fair.
Why were you such a diva?
I don't know. Because I was just born that way.
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, you have to give receivers a bad name, so.
That wasn't my doing. That was done long before me. This game started a long time before I ever played. It
started with Harold.
Yeah, well, Harold must have been the first
and,
diva.
And everything that I knew, I learned from Harold Carmichael, so blame it on him.
So you're just throwing him under the bus now. Jeez.
Yeah. That's reasonable.
Yeah, we're going to have to bring him back on the podcast for him to defend himself.
I don't think he's going to come back on.
No, he probably isn't.
I'm going to tell him the way your guests get treated. He's already been on it.
He's already been through the car wash here, so to speak.
I should have asked him about this, then maybe I would have kept going.
How special was the Eagles-Giants rivalry back when you played? Now, I know how emotional the Cowboys one was.
Yeah.
And I've heard those stories, but how was the Giants rivalry compared?
See, there was a big rivalry, of course, because I guess the close proximity, but I don't think it was what it is today. The rivalry was really about the Dallas Cowboys. But I think over time, that Giants rivalry may have overtaken, in my mind, the Giants rivalry is the big one now.
Oh, I would agree.
Yeah,
I think so too.
You know, a lot of fans that are like my era, older people, because that was the big thing back then, to beat the Dallas Cowboys. A lot hold on to that, and I get that. But I think right now, it's all about making sure that you beat the New York Giants.
Back then the Cowboys were winning Super Bowls, so they're the team that's who you're striving to beat. The Giants have won a couple Super Bowls, so that's the team you look towards. So I think that's sort of how it works. But, you know, you talk to guys like Trent Cole, he'll tell you he hates the Giants more than he hates the Cowboys.
Most of the players now hate the Giants.
I think in over the last, like, decade, we've seen – and I think it started with that Andy Reid, Donovan McNabb era when the Giants kind of – when Andy Reid started, the Giants were the king of this division, and they owned the Eagles for, you know, what was it?
Nine straight games.
And then you saw us obviously take over that role. And then the trash talk started between the two teams. And obviously you had, you know, Shady and OC.
That was
and,
great.
Strahan and Runyon.
It kind of just built from there and manifested itself.
Yeah.
And I actually say, and you talked about it, how the team seemed determined. I remember being on the sideline this past week, and the Giants were coming out of the tunnel for warm-ups, and the way that they were just, you know, jumping up and down and, you know, and just kind of carrying on, and then the way they stomped on the logo before the game. I said to one of our producers, I said to Ray Doyle, I said, Ray, they're way too high right now.
Yeah.
And they're way too emotional about this. And you saw us in warm-ups conversely, and we were just focused. It was business-like, you know, just another day. And we came out and just from the jump just had them.
Well, that's what I think is one of the most impressive things about Chip Kelly is the fact that he doesn't get the guys too high or too low for these types of games, because my fear going to this game was the city's all into it, the fans are all into it. You know how electric the atmosphere was. I was afraid the team was going to lay a dud and to lay an egg out there on the field. And they went out there from the jump and took it right to them. And you had drama at the end with the shutout, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone talks about how you have all the ups and downs of these first 5 weeks of the season. Finally had a little bit of drama there for a good reason, is making sure they held on for the shutout.
McPherson, but I'm surprised.
That's just the first?
That's just a bad approach. That's just a defeatist attitude. How could you approach the game thinking like that?
It's in the back of my mind. I'm just thinking to myself, you know, I expected the Eagles to win. I thought it would be a much closer game than it was. But I'm just talking about worst-case scenario. I'm just thinking to myself, you know, how everyone is just so invested in the team. Because you know it takes time for the fans to trust what's going on here and buy into what Chip Kelly has done. And they're at that point, that crescendo where it's like, they are all on board. They are fully into it. You had the blackout, the Black Sunday promotion going on. Everyone was hyped. You just didn't want that to all of a sudden be like, oh, and then the product on the field. Because you need that. That's what you need at the end, the product on the field to sustain it and keep it rolling. Well, I just wanted to make sure it kept going.
I talked to Fran before the game, and Fran said to me that I wouldn't be surprised if this game goes either way, a blowout, one side or the other, or if it comes down to the last possession.
That was very, yes. I know. But that's just how I felt going into the game because just watching both teams over the last few weeks, I mean, you didn't really know what to expect.
No, I completely get it. You know, you look at what the Giants were able to do in the last three games. They averaged 35 points in the last three games. And the offense, everyone's talking about how, oh, yeah, they've got the West Coast down. They've got the run game down. So I get it. You have to look at the strengths of teams. You have to realize that, you know, that's a pretty good football team. But Sunday night just was not their night.
It's funny, in retrospect, you know, that all the talking back and forth, it was Giants players and maybe the New York Daily News, but the Eagles players weren't saying stuff. It was like, it was us saying stuff. It was, you know, PhiladelphiaEagles.com saying stuff, right. But it was not the players. The players were focused. They weren't going back and forth. They weren't taking the bait. We were taking the bait, and that's what's fun. Yeah. Let us do the trash talking. You guys focus on the job.
It's amazing how the media was trying to bait the players this week. And I'm talking about the Philadelphia reporters.
Absolutely. Trying to get players to bite on it.
Yeah.
Trying to get players to say things that they really shouldn't say that's going to be billboard material.
Exactly. I mean, you had reporters saying, you could call him Sheely, it's okay. And you saw the players and look in their eyes like, no, we know what's going to happen here when we say this stuff. They knew full well. They've been through the gamut before.
Well, and you want to respect guys. You want to respect other teams. And, you know, even as a kid, that's what I was always taught. You respect the other side, and you don't want to do all that trash talking. Although, deep down, you want to put your foot so far as you can up their rear, but you don't disrespect them.
But tell me this. From a player's perspective, are you gonna try any harder to win the game than you would in just the fact that it's a big division game? Are you gonna try harder if you hear that they made fun of Eli Manning? Like, oh my God, we gotta get him now. Like, now we're really gonna try to win the game.
Once the whistle blows, it's just football, and you just try and play the best you can play and execute the best you can execute.
It's all noise.
It's all noise.
So, Mike, the Eagles are 5-1 at this point, and people will talk about after their win over the Rams, is it a soft 4-1, a tough 4-1? Doesn't matter. They're 5-1. What has been, in your estimation?
5-1, and in the words of the famous Giants former coach Bill Parcells, you are what your record says that you are. They're 5-1.
And what's the most impressive aspect of this team's 5-1 start in your estimation?
The five.
The five. Count on Bo.
There you go. Succinct analysis, to say the least.
Brilliant. That's it. That's brilliant.
But you did write a column for a site saying there's still room to improve.
That to me is where it's at. You know, they're 5-1, but they've played one complete game. So I think there's a lot of room for coaches to coach to make sure that guys are not complacent, that guys are on their game, that guys realize that there's a lot more work to do. We can be better than we are, and coaches, I know that they're teaching that. They're preaching that to these guys that, yeah, you've done this and that, but still, look at all of the things that you left on the table, the things that you didn't do. So I think that's key to where they are right now. It's a perfect time to get a little buy and recharge the battery, get ready for this next stretch, and for the coaches to reassess what's happened throughout these first six games. You know, they do a lot of self-scouting. So when they come back, they've got a real good idea on what has happened in the first part of this season and how to move forward to not show too many things. Or when you line up, teams don't know exactly what you're going to do or don't have a real good feel for what's coming at them.
And I feel like that they've done a much better job of that in recent weeks. You look at the Giants game and some of the different formations they were using to try to get the run game going to finally spark it. So,
oh, yeah. Fran and I were talking about that earlier.
Yeah, earlier today. It was really something to see, but really on both sides of the ball, because actually I talked about it with Greg Cosell last night, is on defense. There we go. Thank you. On defense, the first 30 plays.
Is that a nerd alert?
Nerd yes. alert. Okay. Yeah. Whenever I start talking, that's what it usually comes up. Just the amount of different looks. The amount of different looks that the defense showed, what Billy Davis showed, all the different blitzes, all the different coverages, all the different fronts. I mean, they really just did a good job of confusing that offense and really just not allowing Eli to have any kind of throwing lanes to move the ball down the field.
As much as you've seen Eli and as much football as he's played, I think that, you know, showing him one thing pre-snap and then moving to something different after the ball is snapped, I thought it really affected him and affected his play.
We all agree that when Steve Smith was here, right, the other Steve Smith,
yes,
he was like Steve a Smith. Sleeper agent for the Giants, right? We all agree that was the case.
I think I know you're going.
He was rooting for the Giants. He was working for the Giants.
Yes, while I remember the one game from where he grabbed the ball and passed it to one of their defenders,
or where he just went. He went down a yard short of the first down.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah.
Justin Pugh grew up a diehard Eagles fan. Do we think that he was working for our side in that game?
Justin Pugh just got whipped.
Justin Pugh and his dinosaur arms.
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, regardless if it was Sed Thornton or Connor Barwin or Trent Cole or Fletcher, I mean, everybody he said after the game that it was the worst game he's ever played, ever.
I should hope so.
Which is from a non-skilled guy, you would, you know.
Well, and you know what? He couldn't get a beat on the guy because Billy Davis kept switching people, putting different guys on him. So you're dealing with different speeds. You're dealing with different power when guys are coming after him, different moves when guys are coming after him. So – he didn't know what to do.
Now, how do you control Merrill in the booth?
I don't. I just let him go. I don't. No. He's great.
Did you see on our Inside the Eagles show earlier in the year, I think it was week one, they looked back at which call was it? Was it the new miracle of the Meadowlands?
Yeah, no, number two. Yeah.
Number two. Okay, so it was the
– Brian has a mic now.
Yeah,
okay,
Brian has a mic. There you go.
Was it number three?
We've moved on.
Oh, yeah, I guess technically it was Deshaun Jackson's punt return.
Okay.
And they did a remake of it where Merrill's going nuts in the booth and making the call, and you're just in the background, like, you know, barbecuing and like just kind of just hanging out watching. I don't know if did you catch that?
I love the fried chicken part.
That was fun.
they had kebabs going, and they were dressed as mummers and dancing around. So.
Yeah, yeah. But and that's what we do in the booth. We dance around and we dress as mummers. We have a party.
It was an accurate portrayal.
I went to the booth for the first time during a game this last game because I wanted to watch Boys to Men, and I couldn't. You can't hear from the booth. You can't hear from the press box because it's shit. Right. I wanted to see the open air, and it was a party in there, man.
Yeah,
Ike's dancing with Karen Gerstle. They're the whole thing's going on. It's great.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
Who were you dancing with?
When we get to halftime, I usually go out and refresh my makeup and all that
for the radio.
For the radio, yeah.
Mike, you were standing right behind him while they were dancing.
I was standing behind who?
Karen and Ike.
No, I left the room and then I came back. Get it right, B.
Brian is always in the room.
We have GoPro footage of this.
All right, good. Bring it.
Bring it. There's proof. There is proof out there.
Has there been a call over the years? Obviously, you've been working with Merrill now for forever.
How many years has it been?
This is my 17th season, I think. Yeah. And it's been fun. It's, you know what? This guy knows so much, and he's amazing. His recall, things that, you know, he'll relate stories from many years to right now, and it's in sync. He's to me, I don't know how old he is because he'll never tell anybody. His hair is always dark. He always looks the same. He always sounds the same. So you don't really know. But I know this: he's consistent. He just and he knows so much about the history, and he does a great job of setting me up during the broadcast and just letting me do my thing, let me throw in my pieces here and there. Every now and then he'll let me talk, so it's great working with him.
Do you have a call that you remember that stood obviously as one of the best, but then do you have one that was maybe not the best, or you're like, oh, I don't know, we messed that one up?
Yeah, but I forget about them, really. You know, I have that memory like a cornerback, like a defensive back.
Skill player.
It's like, boom. Yeah. When they score a touchdown on me, I forget all about it. I got to go on to the next play.
What's your favorite call then?
Favorite?
It's when Jaquay Parker jumped.
He jumped! Meryl starts screaming. Oh, no. He jumped.
He jumped.
That was funny.
He jumped. Jaquay Parker jumped.
And even that, he's referenced that a couple of times this year.
Yeah.
he's really good, like on the spot, you know, relating something from years ago to like right now, this moment, and it's all relative.
I don't know why that call is so memorable, though. I mean, it just captured, I think, what every fan was thinking. And I think that's what makes Merrill so great, is
well,
he's
not
a
just,
fan.
Not it's, just, it was everybody. Everybody's thinking, okay, they're going to try and draw offside. And Jaquay jumped. Why did he do that? He jumped.
That was funny. How good is your Merrill impression?
I can't do Merrill.
Oh, come on. I think you got it in you.
Come on, Mike.
I bet you're better at it than I am.
No, I don't think so.
Come on, let's hear it.
No, I think you're better.
Come on, Bo.
I'm not going. You're the guest.
I can't do
Please,
it.
Please, ladies first.
I can't do it. That's why I'm asking you to go.
Brandon Boykin did it a couple weeks ago on the website, and it was brutal. It was awful. See? It was the worst I've ever heard.
Let's hear yours, Fran.
I got to wait for you to go.
I can't. I'm not.
It's cool.
I just did it on Jaquay Parker.
Yes,
did it.
That was it.
See?
Yeah,
well, I did mine. Okay, your turn. What?
Oh.
I got to get it in my mind. I'm not going to go in cold. I'm not going to go in cold.
You got to prepare yourself for this.
Yeah.
Gosh. Are we done?
No. So, I think one of the other questions I think Brian put on our sheet here, game plan.
Yeah.
Well, you've talked about what it's like working with the great Merrill Reese. I want to know what it's like working with the great Fran Duffy.
The Emmy nominated.
Like, Fran... Well, here's the first thing.
I'm kind of scared of what's going to come out of your mouth right now.
Be honest.
You have to be here because you're not allowed to be sick because only babies get sick.
Has he said
that? It's a direct quote.
Yeah.
Really?
That's a former...
kind of an inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, only babies. But it's a lot of fun. You know what? He's always so well prepared. He already knows what the program is going to be, how the program is going to look. Before we even come in here, he emails us the script, and when we get here, he already knows. He already knows exactly how he wants everything to come out, how he wants everything to look. I still never got that telestrator part down where you circle everything into all that stuff.
It's a work in progress.
Yeah, Bo
is phenomenal with the telestrator.
I do well. I do very well with the telestrator.
Yeah,
the delestrator.
But it's been fun. You know, it's been really nice, and he's a real pro. I enjoy working.
Oh, thank you, Mike.
He's a real pro.
Too sappy.
I don't know. Listen, I don't know when he sleeps because
that's a really good question.
Yeah, he doesn't.
He's always watching film. Doesn't matter when I come in here. He's got three screens, and he's sitting in front of the screens, and he's watching football. I don't know. You know.
The man is so busy constantly that he doesn't even have time to wet his toothbrush before he brushes his teeth.
You know, I actually tried this the other day. And I didn't. I tried it. I tried it, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it. So, no, I'm going back to the way I usually do it.
Jeez. You're setting your ways.
Wow. It is what it is.
Mike Quick.
Yes, sir.
It's a pleasure having a Hall of Famer.
Are we going to give him some questions?
Oh, you
want
to do the questions?
Oh, yeah. We got to give him questions.
You got to do the questions.
You can't escape without it.
Of course. Pick a number between 1 and 30.
31.
31.
Give him some. Just pick out a couple good ones.
What is your hidden talent?
I have a good guess.
I know the answer,
rap?
But it's not suitable for radio.
Yeah, no, rap's a good one. I don't know if that's hidden, though, because that's on YouTube. The the
we got to work that in. We will work that into here. So
the I'm going to take a guess. Guacamole making.
I can make some mean guac.
Wow, really?
I make a mean
really?
Guac. For sure.
How about your golf game? Give us a quick
I'm just
quick
a decent
rundown.
I used to be pretty good at it, but this year... For whatever reason, this year has been a real bad year for my golf game. But
what's your
high 60s?
What?
What's your handicap?
I think I'm an 8.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
I've been as low as a 4, but I'm an 8 and probably not even a good 8.
So who's better, you or Merrill?
He is.
That's tough for you to admit, isn't it?
I'm not sure I agree. I'm not sure. I think you're saying that.
I think you're overselling it right now.
What's the best part of your game?
We did an Eagles Unscripted that won an Emmy.
That's right. That was great.
That was the episode we put in. I got to say, your game is a little bit better.
Probably a little bit better.
What's the best part
of your
game?
Quick as being
I'm an 8. He's probably a 12, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the best part of your game?
Like usually I'm pretty level-headed, calm. I don't blow up. I don't get too crazy if I birdie a hole and if I make an 8. I don't go crazy. It's such a mental game.
Yeah.
And everybody has physical tools and can play, but I think my mindset, my approach to the game is probably the strength.
So it's not your skills.
No.
So he's an unskilled golfer.
Yeah, okay.
What is a pet peeve of something that Merrill does?
Oh, I got a great one. He likes to break off just a piece of the cookie. Listen, if you're going to have a cookie. He doesn't want to have the cookie. He wants to break a piece of the cookie and just like a little mouse and eat. And then he'll come back later and break another piece. Like, dude, just take the cookie.
Does he finish the cookie or does he just throw the rest out?
Sometimes he'll finish it, sometimes not.
But he leaves it in like the community.
Yeah. He'll just leave it there. Okay. Like, okay, is he going to come back and finish his cookie?
Leave half cookies all around the booth. So.
Yeah.
If you give him Merrill a cookie.
My sister used to do that when we were younger. We would get pizza as a family, and she would pick the pepperoni off the pizza, and she would just leave the pizza there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's similar.
That's a boss move. Yeah. You know who's boss.
Who are the athletes you idolized growing up?
Is that a real question?
Yeah. That's a real question.
Let's think. Probably Babe Ruth back then.
I don't know. Owens. The first book I read was The Big A. Now, can you figure out who The Big A was?
The A Train, Anthony Thomas.
The Big A is the first book I ever read as a kid. Sports book.
Big A. Let's think here.
Think. Ooh. You guys are too young. You guys are too young. Oh, let me give you a hint then.
Okay. What sport?
No, I'm not going to give you that.
Okay.
He changed his name.
He was Muhammad Ali?
No, he was the Big A.
Oh, Abdul-Jabbar.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
There you go.
Very nice.
Yep, when he was
Lou Alcindor.
Yeah. Powell Memorial High School in New York and UCLA, the whole. But the first book that was written about him was about his early life, and then he was Lou Alcindor, so the book was The Big A.
Okay.
Did you play a lot of basketball growing up?
I grew up in North Carolina. You have to play basketball. A kid in North Carolina, you grew up playing basketball.
Let me get this right.
Did you think you were going to play basketball?
I did. I thought that I would play basketball in college. And most of the people around where I grew up, they thought I'd go off
to
play
basketball.
Did you get
recruited as a basketball player?
I did.
For where?
A lot of places.
Wake Forest?
Not Wake Forest. Look how humble
you are. Not as good for Wake Forest, though.
What?
It's taken this long?
I actually worked out at Wake Forest.
For basketball?
With their basketball team.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How'd you do?
I did great.
Okay. So why'd you decide to play football instead?
Because I got smart.
Played the game where you could get hurt?
I played a game where I could get hit in the head a lot.
Okay.
So you played basketball growing up. You had football. Obviously, you're good at golf. And you also played tennis in North Carolina as well.
I just played tennis just when I had nothing else to do. Yeah, I wasn't good at tennis. But I ran track, too.
So I'm shocked the NC State Wake Forest rivalry has not come up at all until just now.
It comes up.
It's really not a rivalry because,
that's true.
You know, Wake Forest was just Wake Forest and we were NC State.
And if you can't go to college, go to state.
Yeah, so. if you can't play, go to Wake.
Did you get a text in the middle of the Baltimore Ravens game like I did? It was the middle of the Ravens game, and I was paying attention. I was watching film in the other room, and I had Red Zone on in the background, and all I hear is touchdown Michael Campanaro, and I was like, oh, all right, look at my phone, and I'm waiting. 3, 2, 1, and I was surprised it didn't get here. By 10 seconds later, I got a text, Michael Campanaro, in all caps from Bo. So I was surprised it took 13 seconds, but
yeah, he gets excited about anybody out of Wake Forest that's
it remains ridiculous to me that Steve Vallis is still on the street. But, yeah.
How he has not found a home.
I think there's some collusion going on. I don't know what it is, but
Mike Quick, on that note, thank you very much for joining us here on the Eagles Insider Podcast. Be so gracious with your time. All right, welcome back to the Eagles Insider Podcast. Special thanks for Mike Quick for joining us here on the show this week. Now we're going to do a little fill-in-the-blank action. We're going to go through some different scenarios, some questions around the league, as well as with the Eagles, and you know, hand out some awards, as now we are, as Chip Kelly said, halfway through the season, 10 games down, with including the preseason.
Hopefully less than halfway, right?
That is true, right. Yes, of course. We'll start with, who is the offensive MVP? And we're not just doing the Eagles, we're doing the NFL as well. But first off, for the Eagles, I'm going to give it to Darren Sproles. You know, ignited the rushing game, had the big touchdown in the win over Jacksonville, had a couple big screen passes in the win over Indianapolis. I thought that he would be a role player. I didn't think he was going to have this much an impact on the offense overall, especially with the struggles that LeSean McCoy had early in the season. I would have to give it to Darren Sproles.
I think that's fair.
Well,
yeah.
Anyone differ?
No. I have Sproles on here too, but I figured somebody else would take him, so I'll go somewhere else. I'm going to go with Jason Peters, just because the offensive line has been in such flux. He's been the one guy who you can count on over there, and you know, respect to Todd Harriman's too for being able to bounce around. But Jason Peters allows the Eagles to do some things on offense that other teams can't do because of his skill set, and having a healthy Jason Peters is really the one thing this offensive line has sort of been able to count on. So.
He has been outstanding the last two games.
And he
in
just
particular.
Yeah, dominated no question Pierre about it. Paul.
So yeah. Dominant. Robert Quinn shut him down. They moved Jason Pierre-Paul because of how much Peters was beating him down. So
yeah, no question about it. I like both your picks.
Okay. Off the board.
I went off the board. I went with Jeremy Maclin.
Very
nice.
You know, coming off the injury, has been incredibly productive, has been the most dependable receiver on the outside. Whenever this team needs a big play through the air, I mean, he's been on the receiving end for the most part, and especially coming off the injury. Any questions you had about Jeremy Maclin were answered, I think, through the first six games.
Very deserving, especially for how much he's targeted in this offense. It's almost like since there wasn't a running game, he had to become more of a focal point of the offense. So all very good answers, all very deserving. Around the league, I went with Philip Rivers of the San Diego Chargers. You know, orchestrating one of the best offenses in the league. San Diego's off to a great start. A lot of deserving candidates. You know, you could go to that team in Dallas. Maybe one of you guys went there. Just a lot of respect for what Rivers had done in San Diego.
I did go to that team in Dallas. I went to DeMarco Murray. You know, he's really what's driving their offense. The distance between him and the number two leading rusher in the league is the same as between number two Le'Veon Bell and like 15 or 16.
It's 16,
or something like that.
That's correct.
And the biggest surprise to me, well, the two biggest surprises, one, that he's staying healthy, and who knows if that'll last throughout the season because they are really piling the carries on, and two, that the Cowboys are allowing him to run the offense for so long. It's been where, why don't they just run the ball more because it's so effective, and they're actually doing it this year, and I think that, you know, helps why they're 5-1.
Yeah, no question. I think there's the stat. I forget exactly who released it, but he's got more yards on first down than the second leading rusher does in the NFL. Than
total.
Le'Veon Bell. So it's obviously they're feeding the ball, and he's producing at a really high level. You guys took my two names, so this is really tough for me. I'm gonna go.
But it's your pick. I mean, you can agree.
I'll throw another name out. Right. I think you can throw Andrew Luck in that mix because I think Andrew Luck is just. He's outstanding. I mean,
that
talk
team
about
is a 500
without him, and without him, and without him, they're less. I mean, he is phenomenal, and he's going to carry them through the playoffs.
That was a great choice there. I would definitely all great choices. Very, very fascinating start to the NFL season. No question. Defensive MVP. You know, a couple different ways we can all go here. I went Malcolm Jenkins. Just how he solidified the back end of the defense. Came up with a couple key interceptions this season. You know, all eyes were on him, whether he could live up to the hype of being the guy brought in free agency to help solidify a position that struggled for this team in recent years. I think he's been more, everything the Eagles have wanted and more, from a leadership and production standpoint. Versatility, can move all around the formation. The way Bill Davis is using him now in blitzes and disguises, I just think that he has been the linchpin for that defense.
I completely agree. I have the same answer for all the reasons you said. Malcolm Jenkins has been great, and I think he's been more than we expected.
He has been really, he's been the D'Amico Ryans of that secondary, where, you know, just the steady veteran who gets those guys lined up, and when the team needs it most, he makes a big play. I went with D'Amico just because, I mean, look, you see, obviously he was banged up all of last week. There was some question at the end of the week of whether or not he was going to play. He knew on Friday he was going to play, and he toughed it out, and he came out and had a really good game Sunday night against the Giants, and really is just the piece that keeps that defense going, especially at the second level. He's just phenomenal and the captain of that defense. So I went to D'Amico Ryans.
The thing with Jenkins is just that the difference between getting competent safety play, you know, above average safety play, and what the Eagles were getting the last couple seasons is so great. It has really changed the face of the defense.
No question. No, absolutely.
Neither of you went Barwin. That was the other one.
He was the other name. If one of you guys had taken Ryan's as well, I would have gone with Barwin, who's been, obviously, over the last couple weeks, has just been outstanding.
Great to see him unleashed on the quarterback this season. I wonder if he's someone who, not that you would want to have a label of jack of all trades, but is kind of like, you know, I'm a good player. It seems like that kind of diminishes his ability overall when you say that he's kind of, oh, he's, you know, jack of all trades. You say jack of all trades, master of none. No, he's very, very good at doing many things. It's just last year he was asked to be more in coverage because he's the one guy who had played as a 3-4 outside linebacker. This year, because now you have Trent Cole and Brand Graham who have come on the rise, that he's able to get to the quarterback more. So
yeah, no question. And I think also he's really gotten better as a pass rusher as well. So you know, while that he was in coverage more last year, I think he's taking more advantage of his opportunities this year. And obviously, look, the other guys along the line are playing outstanding as well. So that's kind of helping him out.
Around the league, I'll go J.J. Watt. I mean, with the interceptions return for touchdowns, the impact he's had on that Texans defense, I don't know if you're really going to have any arguments.
No.
I mean, he's the one guy on defense who's meriting consideration for league MVP overall at this point. So.
Yeah.
Number three question here. Who's the biggest surprise, or what's the biggest surprise, I guess you would say, on the Eagles and around the NFL? For the Eagles, I'm going to go special teams. I mean, yes, they invested the money in guys like Braman and Maragos. They made the trade for Cody Parkey. Everyone talked about the time invested that, you know, on special teams and training sessions. You got Darren Sproles from the Saints. Doesn't mean you're going to see those results on the field, especially the way that they've manifested themselves in the first six regular season games here for the Eagles. So, I mean, for you count on special teams to win you a couple of close games throughout the course of the season, and the special teams have definitely done that already to this point. So I'm going to go Eagles special teams.
Yeah, specifically I go to the guy who was your offensive MVP. I go to Sproles. You know, I knew that the Eagles were going to try to do some stuff with Sproles that they couldn't do last year, but, you know, he is older. His yards per carry and everything and yards per catch have declined over the past few years. You know, it was only a fifth round pick, but you still gave it up for a declining guy. I didn't think he was going to be this much of an impact player for the Eagles this season. It seems now, I mean, if you know, knock on wood, if he was lost for the rest of the season, it was already worth a fifth round pick. He's won a bunch of games for the Eagles. He's been really one of the saving graces on offense. So I didn't expect quite that impact from Sproles.
Coming into the season, if you had said there are two positions where you couldn't afford to have injuries on this team, just looking at the depth and looking at where they, you know, spent their resources in the offseason, you would have said offensive line and inside linebacker. And those were the two positions where we've had the most injuries, obviously with Kelsey and Mathis, and Harriman's at one point was moved over because Lane Johnson was out for four games. And then at inside linebacker, losing Michael Kendrick, losing Najee Good. Casey Matthews, the way that he's played over the last two or three weeks has just been outstanding. I think, you know, obviously, and he's still, you know, for the most part, splitting reps there with Emmanuel Acho. Marcus Smith is getting in the mix as well, more so over the last couple of weeks as time has gone on and he's getting more comfortable. But Casey Matthews over the last 3 weeks, it's beyond comprehension the way that he's playing right now. I don't think anybody expected it. And kudos to him. I mean, he's playing the best football of his career right now.
I also like he was getting into it. He was reacting more than we've ever seen from him early in that game. It's fun. It's fun to watch him grow.
No question.
All right, around the league, I'm going to say the Cowboys defense, because they were maligned throughout the preseason, beginning of season, that they were going to be historically bad. And they've kept the team afloat. I mean, obviously, they're not going to be 5-1 to this point without the defense or playing sound. Rod Marinelli is doing a great job for them down there. So
who's slurping the Cowboys now?
No.
I mean,
that's obvious surprise to me.
I mean, the offense is doing a good job of kind of keeping that defense off the field. So it'll be interesting to see if there's ever a game where Dallas can't get it going on the ground game and or you know in the run game and you know things aren't going for them well.
So Thanksgiving is what you're saying.
Let's see. Yeah, I mean that that matchup, the matchup of our defensive line against Dallas's offensive line is going to be awesome. I'm really really looking forward to that.
I'll go with the Browns.
That's a good one.
3-2.
Yep.
It's a bit of a surprise. You know, I think we all were sort of expecting that Johnny Football was going to make his appearance sooner than later, but Brian Hoyer has done a good job leading him on, and that defense is not bad. So I'll go with the Browns.
Yeah, I was thinking Browns too. I guess one other team I could throw in there would be New Orleans, just because on both sides of the ball, you know, I'm very surprised at how they're performing right now, and obviously Jimmy Graham's injury doesn't help them, but. Defensively, I mean, there were high hopes for them, and it's very, very surprised that they're not panning out.
What is the biggest disappointment, or I guess thing that needs to improve the most here for the Eagles and around the league? For the Eagles, you're starting to see signs of but just getting the offense going on a more consistent basis. You're getting the offensive lineman back. I thought David Mulk played by far his best game since he's been put in position. You're going to get Kelsey back and Mathis back in a couple weeks. You know, luckily, it doesn't seem like Sproles will be out for an extended period of time, but just getting the offense going on a more consistent basis would be the one thing that I would look at. I mean, you're looking at this team at 5-1 and seeing how defense and special teams have been big contributors here. Offense, they'll played very well on Sunday night, minus the two turnovers. You just want to see that continue moving forward.
I will say Nick Foles' ball protection is, you know, 7 interceptions to the 2 we threw last season.
Mm-hmm.
I think he needs to protect the ball better.
Yeah, I think he's leading the league in turnovers right now. So I think right now, you know, that would be the big thing, would just be protecting the ball more and just, hey, continue moving the ball up the field.
Around the league, Fran, I went with what you had for the biggest surprise, the Saints.
Yeah.
Overall. Just I thought they were a Super Bowl contender, thought they were going to be right there in the mix. You know, it seemed like that they improved the defense. They got Jarius Byrd in the offseason. You know.
How's that look right now? Let Malcolm Jenkins go, who's been, you know, all pro, everything.
I mean, Sproles.
And Sproles, and obviously Sproles as well. They lost Lance Moore, who's been a key player for them over the last few years. And they are just, you know, struggling right now, to say the least.
For me, it's the Bucks. I thought they were going to be
a competitive
average team, and they've just been just trash. I mean, they don't even show up for games. It's terrible. I thought they were going to be you know, competing maybe in that division. It's just been terrible.
You saw that Atlanta game on Thursday Night Football, and you're like, all right, well, you know, it's Thursday night. They've had a lot of injuries on D. And then they just came out again. I mean,
well,
five touchdowns.
I thought, you know, okay, Glennon gave them a little juice. Yeah. They beat the Steelers. They should have beaten the Saints. And then they just, like, at home against the Ravens. Oof, just getting
didn't show up.
Jeez.
And that's what it's Lovie Smith, you think, defense.
Yeah. Right.
That's what you think. And the players they have on that team.
Yeah.
I mean,
McCoy,
there's talent.
Levante David. And,
yeah, I mean, they've had some injuries, but. And obviously, you know, losing the offensive coordinator, for a number of a while has hurt them as well. But it's a big surprise.
So play of the year so far in the NFL.
Tough one.
Eagles in the NFL. For the Eagles, I went with Macklin's touchdown against Washington. And how, Frank, you went with the easy offensive MVP. I thought that was a very symbolic moment because you had DeSean Jackson on the other sideline. He had the long touchdown.
Yep.
You know, Washington's back in the mix here. Well, Macklin kind of outdoes him with the big touchdown, has the signature performance. I go with Macklin's touchdown there.
That was a good one.
I go with another symbolic moment from that same game, Jason Peters knocking Chris Baker's head off after the cheap shot on Nick Foles, you know, shows that this team is there for each other. And it was fun. First of all, it was just fun. It's my favorite moment to watch of the season. Peters going after him, running from across the sideline, going after Chris Baker, the piece of trash that he is. And, I thought that was great.
I went with Sproles' touchdown against the Colts just because in that game he was just outstanding. And really, I mean, look, that was a tough game on Monday Night Football on the road, and he carried the team. He had a number of big plays in that game on offense and special teams. That touchdown run where, you know, he kind of barrels into the end zone with three defenders was just awesome.
So many great moments.
Yeah.
It really is hard to pick one. I really didn't have – there's around the league, there's not one that's really stood out to me. I'll throw another Eagles one. It's not really a great play, but going back to Indianapolis, just Cody Parkey's game-winning field goal.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, he had to kick it twice. Team he got was traded from. Going back to Indianapolis, I mean, just another great moment right there. So I'm kind of weaseling out of the question, I'll be honest.
Right.
Play of the year, I think, was a really, really nice touchdown grab this week by the Baltimore Ravens wide receiver, Michael Campanaro.
Had to throw that in there. I went with a touchdown grab as well. I went with Brandon Marshall, one of three touchdown catches he had against San Francisco. The one-hander over Jimmy Ward was just, he's a freak. And obviously that offense is very, very strong. So Marshall's touchdown against San Francisco.
So a lot of good moments there. So the most annoying overused storyline between the Eagles and the NFL. Eagles one, I had a tough one with, because there's some that, you know, things that come up each and every week that are still kind of relevant. I'm actually going to make a last second switch here. I'm going to go with, have teams call up to Chip Kelly. Mm. And it's like, yes, okay, you know, has the offense struggled? Yes, I said it's the one thing that needs to improve the most. But at the same time, look at the injuries that they're having. Still, you have guys like Macklin who are playing in the system for the first time. So, and I think Kelly has done, and Pat Shurmur have done a great job of adjusting the offense on the fly in recent weeks to try to get the run game going, to try to change things up.
A lot of new wrinkles this past week.
So I will go. I'll go with that.
Looking forward to the
one.
Eagle Eye.
I know.
Hopefully tonight breakdown. Or tomorrow, Thursday.
So I'll go with that one. I actually originally went with the Foles 27-2. That is just like, look, you know, could he replicate it?
Can't match that. Yeah.
But it's, I think Mike Quidd said in his column that on the site, there are great quarterbacks who have never had that year. So
this is a tough one. I'm going to go with this. Now, this is, I think, a reasonable storyline, and I understand why people are asking about it. I'm curious about it myself, but I'm a little tired of having to go over it every single week when the coaches are clearly not going to make this change. Should Brandon Boykin be on the
outside? That's a great one. That is the one, yes. That's a good one.
It's tough because I am curious. Like, I think Brandon Boykin might be the best cornerback on the team. I'd love to see what he could do on the outside, but it's clearly not going to happen. So it seems like we're just throwing slop against the wall every week and hoping for a different answer because clearly – if those guys, the big guys on the outside are healthy, Brandon Boykin is going to be in the slot. I'd like to see them play nickel a little bit more so that Boykin's on the slot, even though opposing offenses are, as I've talked about with Fran, you know, they're keeping two tight ends in. They want the Eagles defense to be in base, so Boykin's out on the field. But I would like to see him on the field more because he's a playmaker. But I'm tired of talking about it every week.
That's a good one.
That was a good one. And the one that I wish I thought of that one because that one irks me to the core. The one that I went with was one that the last 2 weeks, it's a moot storyline because no one talks about it. It's the pass rush. The first 4 weeks of the season, obviously they started the season off with that great game against Jacksonville and sacked Henny, I think, four times. And then there wasn't a sack for a couple of weeks. And all I've said was, look, the opposing quarterbacks are getting the ball out quickly. They're doing a good job getting there. The sacks just aren't there. And it's just funny how now it's like, you know, the same – the defense, it's not like there was an aha moment on Sunday night when they took the field. Like, this is the way that they've been playing. There was just more consistent. There weren't any lapses. I mean, look, you kept them out of the end zone for four quarters. It hasn't been done in 18 years. But it's not like this defense just took – it's not like they woke up Sunday morning and said, okay, now we're going to be great. Like, this is the way that they've been playing. It just manifested itself Sunday night into, you know, four quarters of great play.
Why does the Boykin thing irk you to the core?
Because it's a topic, like Bo said, where – it's been brought up so many times. It was brought up last year. It was brought up in the offseason. It was brought up again early in training camp through the early parts of the regular season. Look, they obviously think that these two guys on the outside are going to get the job done. And I think for the most part they do. You know, Billy Davis got kind of animated last week at his press conference that, you know, you saw the plays that Bradley Fletcher and Kyrie Williams made on the ball in the first half. And Bradley Fletcher made a great play along the sideline, throwing his hands up at the catch point and knocking the ball out. Shot his hands through the receiver's hands at the last minute, knocked the ball out. It was a great play. And then the next, you know, in the fourth quarter, there's a play where he's supposed to have safety helps, or, you know, he didn't have that there. And, you know, he misplayed the ball in the air. Like, that, it happens. But if those were reversed, would the storyline have been the same? Would the narrative have been the same? It's just... just leave it alone. Like, right now, it's working out really well. And look, they played the other night against San Francisco or against the Giants. Brandon Boykin was in the slot on Victor Cruz a number of times, and they didn't give him any help, and he did a great job. So, I mean, look, I think there's a great role for Brandon Boykin. He's doing a great job in that role. Let him master that craft before you try and, you know, create a bigger role there.
Sort of like Vinny Curry.
Right.
Almost
exactly.
With the pass rush. Same thing. So, all right. Two more here. I'm trying to say.
Overused in the NFL.
Yeah. I went with the demise of the Patriots. Because it seemed like it's getting to the point where it's like, and I can understand they had their struggles and they looked putrid on that Monday night loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. Happy for Big Red to get that huge win, you know, kind of the Super Bowl revenge almost, so to speak, number of years later. But Belichick and Brady find a way, and with the weapons that they haven't really had in recent years on offense, you know, all these changes now on the offensive line, trying to get new receivers incorporated into the offense, it seems like they're going to get together, even though they had two big losses with Ridley and Mayo this past weekend.
For me, it's, you know, it's we were 6 weeks into the NFL season. It's such an interesting season. There are so many good storylines. The Cowboys are 5-1. There's all this stuff. Like, they're playing really well. And all anybody ever wants to talk about is Michael Sam. Oh, wait, that's actually not the case. Nobody's talking about Michael Sam. So the fact that we thought this was going to be some big distraction and nobody's talking about it, I think that tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, no question about it. I like that. That was good. I'm going to go with – you know what? I was going to go with John Harbaugh and the whole thing down in or Jim Harbaugh and everything down in San Francisco, and I'm not going to go there. I think the one that – and I'll speak for Eagles fans that watched the game from home, because I actually had a number of people text me during the game and say, why do they keep talking about this, is the Cowboys. Because it was Sunday night, Eagles-Giants, you know, night game, like everything's – there's it's a huge matchup. All the talk, you know, leading up to the game, and all they talked about was the Cowboys' big win over Seattle leading up to the game and during halftime and things like that. So – Let's pump the brakes a bit on the Cowboys and see what happens on Thanksgiving night.
I thought you were going to go with Johnny Manziel, because even after the win over Dallas, I think Jerry Jones was asked, so how about Johnny Manziel now? And it's one thing if you frame the question like, are you glad that you use that on a Zach Martin instead of a quarterback, that type of thing? But you know, it's like, why is he still coming up, especially that he's not relevant even for Cleveland.
But that's what's funny is that you can give Dallas credit. I mean, look, they built a great offensive line, but if Jerry Jones had his druthers, he would still have Johnny Manziel down there. So, I mean, that's you want to give credit, but you really can't.
Last one here in our fill-in-the-blank segment, best celebration on the team. I don't really have a best celebration. I think it's really, for me, the worst celebration or the most disappointing celebration, and that's Chris Maragos.
Ah.
And his lack of a touchdown.
Yeah.
Lack of a touchdown.
He told us he was going to have one.
Exactly. Right here on the podcast. If I had to come up with a celebration, I did a James Casey spike, because I think he destroyed the ball.
Yeah, I've never seen a ball fly.
That was unbelievable.
That was awesome. That's why he's been lifting weights, just for that that spike.
That moment, so.
I'll go back to a few years ago. I'll go Brian Roll.
Just tasteless.
That was good. Did he get fined?
He got fined.
Roly poly.
Yeah.
Jeez. That was a good one. That was
I
nice
did like that time. Celebration too, yes.
I would go with Casey, though.
I went with Vinny Curry. Last couple of weeks, he's had his dance after the sacks, and I know it's taken hold on social media. So good for Mr. Get Flea.
Very
another
nice.
Friend of the podcast.
All right, it's time for our final segment of this bi-week edition of the Eagles Insider Podcast. It's the fails of the week, and we're going to start with Arkansas head coach Brett Bielema.
Bielema.
There we go. We got a fail right there. And we got that. So that might be number six. And so number five here, wearing flip-flops on the set. So not the
I don't think it's that bad. It doesn't bother me that much. But the fact that they're like the shower shoe flip-flops instead of the
I would say that's
is worse.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree. I mean, you guys have done that before, right? Where
all the time.
You know where you're only going to be seen from the waist up. So, you know, you're wearing shorts or
pro tip post game shows on the road. I generally wear flip flops.
Do you really?
Yes.
Look at that. So right. We have to expose that. I think maybe in the next edition. So Arizona game number four. I actually enjoy this. Former Notre Dame head coach and South Carolina head coach Lou Holtz giving him more cowbell.
He was like speaking in tongues at this point.
I don't know. I couldn't understand what he was saying. Most of the time, I can't understand what he's saying on the air. But nonetheless,
he's got some moves there. There's some hip wiggle there.
Let's replay that one more time.
I don't know if we're able to, but that was pretty
impressive.
That's
fine. Mark May wanted nothing of that whatsoever.
There we go.
See?
Look at that.
We got Jay Cutler, Bears quarterback. A left-handed throw. So trying to get the ball out. He's like, a little push.
And he hit him in the nuts.
And hits.
That's great. You really buried the lead on this one, Brian.
Jeez.
It's not about the throw.
Jay Cutler, left-handed throw at ref. Doesn't say at the ref's crotch.
Oh, nice.
All right.
How is that not number one?
Number two. All right, let's see this one. Auburn offensive coordinator Rhett Lashley tries to call a timeout. And yeah.
Almost takes the ref out.
Wow.
I'm still going with the Cutler to the nuts.
Oh yeah. Oh, look at this. We get the all 22 breakdown here. Now let's see.
Oh yeah.
Now he almost breaks his leg.
Yeah, that could have been bad.
What's worse, Nick Foles sliding or Rhett Lashley there?
Nick Foles sliding because he's doing it on purpose.
He looked like Jordan Matthews after his first NFL touchdown on that play.
And number one, North Colorado going for a 2-point conversion. Doesn't quite go too well.
They run this all
the way back.
I don't think they do either. This is all for a possible 2-point conversion.
Yes.
This is basically what it is, Bri. I like the music choice.
And just
this isn't
lateral.
A fail. This is awesome.
No, this isn't. This is a fail because it goes out of bounds and they don't get it.
That's why it's a fail. Awesome. But it is.
This was all over a 2-point conversion.
Yes.
All over 2-point conversion. That's all this was.
Every point matters.
That was good.
Was the result of the game?
They actually end up winning.
I still think Cutler should have been number one.
Fair enough.
Yes.
That's all right. That's comical though.
Give us your thoughts on social media.
There we go. Hashtag Eagles Insider fails.
Thanks.
Hashtag Bri Eagles Bri for Brian.
Yes.
All right. So, I like it.
So those are your fails of the week, and that's going to do it for this edition of the Eagles Insider podcast. And,
Eagles Beakley.
We'll be back next week to preview the Arizona Football Cardinals. So for Bo Wolf, Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. Thanks for joining us. What are you guys doing for the bye week?
Driving up to Rhode Island first thing Saturday morning.
Very nice.
Meg and I. It'll be fun.
Oh, look at that. A little getaway action. Bo?
Yeah.
I'm going to go see Cosmo.
Nice. It's about time.
Yeah.
Long overdue. Was supposed to go camping this weekend. Got postponed.
Oh, it did get postponed.
Yes, why? Go ahead.
Got postponed
tell us.
Because of the manhunt for Eric Frayne that's going on in the Poconos right now. The reservation where we're going to be at was within 20 miles of
Brian
where
is
searching.
Cracking up. I don't know why he thinks that's so funny.
I'm glad you think that's hilarious that the kids could have been in danger. So they postponed it till spring. So
you should go camping in the backyard.
Backyard camping.
Should do that. So I mean, my wife spent a bunch of money on camping supplies and gear. My son Julian was all set to go.
You should do that.
So maybe we'll end up doing that. And he is very excited that Julian Vandervelde is back on the team.
You could just go right across the street, go to FDR. A little camp out at FDR.
How about the fields? How about the practice
fields? The practice field, so.
I still think you should go to the ninth hole at FDR.
The ninth hole at nine?
Yeah.
The concrete jungle?
As long as it hasn't rained in the last week or so, it should be fine. It won't be flooded, but.
I think backyard.
Backyard might be a way to go. So that's going to be my. So
then you can get Carter in
it,
too.
That would be awesome. So
I like it.
So let us know what your bye week plans are. A lot of fans trying to figure out what to do with this free weekend. But nonetheless, we will see you guys next week here on the Eagles Insider Podcast.
Eagles Beakley.